This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast version of Ben and Woods. Thanks for finding us wherever you are, radio.com, downloading the radio.com app, or, of course, you can listen to us on your smart speaker, and make sure you subscribe so you get our content every single day.
Absolutely. And there's lots of other podcasts from other hosts here in the building and here at 97.3. Make sure to check those out as well. But right now, back to Ben and Woods.
Final hour of Ben and Woods on a Monday is brought to you by your San Diego Honda dealers. Take advantage of year-end savings offers on your favorite Honda model. Your San Diego Honda dealers are ready to wrap up a deal you'll love at their Happy Honda Days sales event. Visit sdhondadealers.com. Woodsy, I know you're putting together a lineup for the Padres.
It's killing me.
Keep
right
working
now.
On that. That's
I'm
okay.
Going righty and lefty, and it's... it's not confidence.
Little hoops here, just on a Monday morning. We talked about Luka Doncic last week a couple of times.
God, that kid.
And went into Staples Center yesterday and had a big second half to beat the Lakers. Anthony Davis. I don't know why I call him Antonio. LeBron James. Lakers looked good in the first half. I thought they were going to cruise. And then the Mavs had a great second half. Doncic getting the job done. They're for real. I mean, they're one of the contenders in the Western Conference for sure. And then Clippers looked really good last night against not a very good team, the Washington Wizards, but scored 82 points in the first half. Paul George was sharp. Kawhi scored 34. 150-125 the final. So the Lakers now 17-3. Now tied for the best record in the NBA with the Milwaukee Bucks, who are also 17-3. Clippers 15-6, doing just fine. Everyone's on pace for the playoffs where they're supposed to be at the end of the season.
Where did you say where the Mavs are? Where are they again?
Mavs are in fourth in the Western Conference, 13-6, so just behind the Clippers, tied with the Houston Rockets. But, you know, for a young team, probably only getting better, they're in good shape as well.
That kid, man, that highlight was going around Twitter yesterday of him, you know, way beyond the arc, kind of looking in LeBron's face, stepping back and draining that long three. He's special. 20 years old, man. Unbelievable.
It really is. It's fun to watch. It was college basketball I watched the most, though, this weekend because I did not want to miss. I wanted to see if the Aztecs were for real. They won their first six games, but you just never know. I mean, they're playing, you know, Long Island. They're playing Tennessee State. And you just don't know how good the competition is. But you figured going into this tournament in Las Vegas, Creighton, and then either Iowa or Texas Tech, they'd face a real challenge. And, man, did they step up to the challenge. On Thanksgiving night, they blew Creighton out of the water. Yep. And Creighton, I know, doesn't sound like the Giant. They're good. They're always a good basketball program. They play in the Big East, go to the tournament more often than not, and they beat them by 31 points. Creighton doesn't lose by 30 points. It almost never happens. So they had a dominating performance. Just everything was going in. Just played really well. And then they come back on short rest, and I thought, okay, they finally hit a wall, and they were down 16 to Iowa in the championship game on Friday night in the first half. And it was like, okay, you know what, they're going to lose at some point, no big deal. Wouldn't you know, second half, Malachi Flynn goes off. San Diego State, you know, turns up the pressure in the backcourt press. They start trapping, go on a huge run, end up down 16. They win by 10 over Iowa to win the Las Vegas Invitational and improve to 8-0 on the season. And now you have to acknowledge that this is a legit college basketball team, Woodsy, this year. We'll see if they, you know, Utah State was picked to win the Mountain West, and they start Mountain West play this week. On Wednesday, they'll be at Colorado State. And then they've got San Jose State at home on Sunday, I believe, at Viejas Arena. They keep taking care of business. They could be 13-0 by the time they face Utah State in January. And I don't know how high they can get in the rankings. I'm hoping that when the new rankings come out today, that enough people around the country that have a vote will pay attention to what the Aztecs did this last week and the fact they're 8-0 and put them in their rankings. I'm not promising you they will. I mean, Joe Lunardi had them as a 7 seed, which if you do the math means they're either the 25th, 26th, 27th, or 28th best team in the country, according to just one guy's opinion with ESPN. But they will definitely get some votes, and it could be close when it comes out later today.
When's that Utah State matchup?
Utah State's sometime in January is when they face it for the first time. They also play Utah at Staples Center later this month in a non-conference game. But they'll be favored in pretty much every game. Now, you know, dangerous game at Fort Collins. Colorado State can always be tough. That's the conference opener this Wednesday. But they take care of business. I'm happy for Dutch. This is his third season. Went into it knowing, okay, we're going to find out now. This is his team, his recruits.
His guys, yeah.
Does he really have what it takes to succeed and step into the shoes of Steve Fisher and what he left and keep this program at the level that Steve Fisher, the bar that he established? And I'm glad to see that based on, you know, the first part of this season, it looks like he can. That San Diego State basketball is real and is back.
Yeah, and, you know, typically the starts have been slow.
Yeah.
And the late season come-on has been really spectacular and a lot of fun to watch. What you hope for is that it's not the reverse. That it's steady. You know, just nice and steady. Take care of the games that you need to win. You know, and you won that tournament this week, and that's a big, big deal.
You had some younger players, though, that needed a season this year. You have these transfers who come in, and Flynn's outstanding. And Yanni Wetzel is...
They are cruising together. They are gelled and meshing together so well.
Oh, really? They do look like, I mean, like they're a few steps ahead of their opponents in terms of chemistry right now.
So you're telling everybody right now, you're going to go ahead and get ahead of yourself right now, aren't you? I know you.
Okay. Now, normally, I would say, what's the goal? Hey, get into the tournament. Hey, maybe win a game, Sweet 16, dream big for the Aztecs. That would be great.
There it comes. National championship.
That's as far as they've ever gotten. Have you noticed the state of college basketball so far this year?
Yes.
There are no, like, unbeatable teams. You're not going to run into someone that is like, oh, they're just too good. Hey, we got to, you know, we have an 8 seed, and we got to go up against a 1 in the second round. We've got no hope in that game. Normally, that's what college basketball is. This year, though, everyone is vulnerable. Evansville, you know, can upset a Kentucky.
Duke can lose to
Stephen F. Austin. Everyone is vulnerable. If there was ever a season for at least a surprise Final Four bid, dream big.
Pure madness.
Fans.
Yes, actual March madness could be upon us.
Dream big this year. I don't see why San Diego State, based on what I've seen so far, obviously they'll need to draw good matchups. They'll need some luck. They'll need shots to go in. They are good enough, in my mind, from what I've seen, to make not only a run in the tournament, but a deep run if things go their way. So why not dream big? And Woods, this is what separates college basketball from college football. I can sit here after a hot start for SDSU. They may fall apart and not even make the NCAA tournament. I don't know. You know, they could have injuries. Malachi Flynn goes down. Who knows? It's all in the future. But I can dream right now. Hey, the way they're playing right now, and they keep developing, and they keep playing like this, they stay healthy, they get some good draws, they could be Butler, they could be Loyola of Chicago, they could play in the Final Four. I can't do that for San Diego State football. There's no dream that I can come up with at the start of the season. Hey, well, if they just do this, and they just do that, and they win this game, and they beat UCLA. No, they can win every game they play. They could be 12-0 right now, going to the Mountain West Championship. The best they could do...
Is win the Mountain West.
And be that New Year's Six bowl game in a Cotton Bowl. They're not getting in the top four. They're not getting in the playoff. They've got no hope. Basketball, completely different story. And to me, that makes all the difference in the world.
The best part of sports, the Cinderella story. There's nothing better.
Even if it's a minuscule chance, it's a 1 in a million shot. I want to know that there's the, you know, with soccer, the Leicester City. I want to know that my team can win it all. If everything goes right, and I can't do that in college football, and it still bothers me.
Well, if you've seen Miracle on Ice, if you've seen Glory Road, if you've seen all of these movies, those movies are made about Cinderella stories. I mean, if you've seen The Rookie, all of those. I mean, it's the best thing about sports is we love to see dynasties. Some of us love to see dynasties, and those are really fun and special to be a part of. But, man, there is nothing better than David against Goliath. Nothing. And if you can play that David role, and I don't think they're David. You know, they're not some turd college from the middle of nowhere, but man, they're also not a blue blood powerhouse. So it is fun to watch those guys win, man. It is fun to watch them grow and their chemistry kind of expand. And yeah, truly, Benny, you're right. As we sit today, the sky is the limit for the Aztecs basketball team.
Why not?
The sky's the limit.
Dream big, San Diego State fans.
Mean, honestly, we could, by the way, if the Padres made one or two moves, no kidding, you go into spring training going, this team could win a World Series.
By
honestly.
The way, I will throw a bone here to the Aztecs, because Brian Dutcher is going to come on with us tomorrow. They've got their first conference game this Sunday. They're doing like a deal on their website. It's SDSU Cyber Monday, $5 tickets to Viejas Arena.
Nice.
If you want, on their Cyber Monday sale. Get in there, make that place loud again, make it sound like it used to when Kawhi Leonard was roaming the halls of San Diego State and doing his thing. The team that went 34-3. This is the first time they've been 8-0 since that team in 2010-2011. Let's start seeing some excitement back up at Montezuma Mesa. Let's see that place filled. Let's see it loud. Let's hear the show rocking and chanting and see how far this team can go, because I guarantee you they'll go a little bit farther if they've got the backing, that loud backing of the fans, and turn that home court advantage back into what it was a few years ago. It's not bad now, but it could be better. It's gotten quieter, undoubtedly, the last few years of Viejas Arena. Let's get it loud again. This team is actually showing that it probably deserves the support of San Diego basketball fans.
Yeah, and let's retweet that from Ben and Wood so people can have it on their Twitter, can go and buy those $5 tickets.
Throw it out there here in a second.
See the new uniforms I got? The Jordan throwback? The Chicago Bulls style?
No.
Oh, I got to send you the picture.
Sick.
Oh, my God. They look so clean.
Uni watch. Yeah.
They wore those. Did they wear those on in the tournament one of the days? I'm not a uniform.
No, they're premiering them for on Saturday.
Oh, they're Friday, coming out. New, the, okay, so we haven't seen them
for
yet.
Conference
okay,
play.
I was going to say, I don't remember seeing them. So, okay, so new uniforms coming out this weekend. Excellent. All right, so, that's San Diego State. Brian Dutcher joining us tomorrow. When we come back, the Woods is going to take a first stab at the Padres lineup based on what they've got right now. Still early, a lot of moves still to come, but it's going to be an evolving process over the offseason.
Yeah, if it started tomorrow and I've got the lineup card, what am I running out there on opening
day? Yeah, I'm curious what it's going to look like. So that's coming up next. Right now, let's get a check of traffic with Ben Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Here's Kelly Danick. So what would the Padres lineup look like if they had to play a game, you know, tomorrow? A little rusty, probably, without any spring training to get ready. But other than that, Woodsy has put pen to paper here over the last hour and is trying to come up with, based on the moves they've made so far, obviously more could be to come, what Jace Tingler would write down on his lineup card for game one against the Colorado Rockies. Right?
Yeah.
What's wrong?
Why not?
You don't like it?
No.
It's not ready. It's not fully baked.
It's ready.
You just don't like it.
It's done. Pen has
come out of the oven.
Pen has been put to paper.
Oh, boy.
And I just don't know.
Just cookies really? Are a little underdone.
All right. You want it?
So yeah, So
let's... Do we check a traffic or anything? We
nope.
Good?
No, right. You get to go.
Let's go.
You have 40 Padres. Minutes of copy to read? No,
let's
we're good?
Show
okay.
How it's done.
All right. So there's a... game one, let's say. So we're fast forward to spring training. We've made no other moves, and this is what we're working
payroll
with.
Payroll is sitting right at $140 million.
Yeah. And it's game
Will Myers
one.
Still on the team.
And Jace Tingler is in his office, and they hand him his very first lineup card. And they say, Jace, here you go. Day you've been waiting for. Actually never done it before in your entire life. At any level, really. But here, he did it in the Dominican. It's fine. You know how to do this. So he writes down. So you got John Gray, more than likely on the bump for the Rockies, right-handed, tall, long flowing locks. And you've got for the Padres so far. Here we go. You ready? Righty on the bump. You got Tatis leading off playing short. You got Hosmer playing first, batting second. You got Machado, third base, hitting third. You got Hunter Renfroe in right field, batting fourth. You got Frankie Mejia behind the dish, hitting fifth. You got Franchi Cordero, assuming he's healthy and makes the team in
that's
left.
It's a
massive assumption.
Wild
massive.
Assumption,
massive.
But sure.
It's massive. I get it.
Get his left-handed bat in there.
Then you got Grisham. the new kid, center field, in the 7-hole. Second base, you got Greg Garcia. 9-hole, you got Garrett Richards, opening day starter.
I'm in. Let's go.
Let's roll.
Yeah, I can see why you think there's still some work to be done.
Yeah, you think? I mean, the Franchi assumption is a big one. Now,
fact that Mejia would be hitting fifth at this point.
He's got pop.
The Greg Garcia, as much as we like him, is in the opening day lineup, that you're relying on Trent Grisham already in center field, at least against right-handed pitchers. It doesn't
blow your skirt up.
It doesn't strike me as a playoff team based on that lineup that they throw out there on opening day.
Now, again, this is just we're just futzing around here. I don't know what kind of spring training Will Myers is going to have, but if I'm playing matchup, if I'm wanting to get lefty bats in against a guy like John Gray, then yeah, I mean those are my lefty bats. You'd have.
Who are you sitting on the bench that's so great though?
Well, you got Myers on the bench. You got Austin Hedges on the bench. You got Naylor on the bench.
Man,
I hardly
Margot.
Know her. You got Margot on the bench. You've got Ian Kinsler on the bench. You got maybe Ty France. Jorge Onya that you protected. He's on the 40-man, so he'll be on the bench. That's pretty much it, buddy. Pretty much what we're working with there.
All right.
Richards, 0-1,
that's okay. Yeah, this is a long season.
Long, you got 161 of these. There's nothing to worry about, man.
When day two is paddock day, we can hopefully get a win there.
All right, so where can they immediately upgrade?
Outfield, catcher.
Second base.
Outfield, second base, outfield.
I mean, all three positions out in the outfield.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
You'd be okay. Well, let me be the optimist of the group.
The easier question is, what positions do we not have to worry about?
If you've got a healthy Hunter, a healthy Franchi, there's a lot of home runs in that lineup. We have no idea what Trent Grisham's going to look like in a Padres uniform, but. We can remain optimistic, at least at this point. That's not the worst thing I ever heard in the outfield. I think second base, immediately, you can make the lineup look a lot better. You bring in someone who's got a bat, who can play second right there. You bump everyone down a peg in the order. All of a sudden, the lineup looks deeper, looks more full, if you just add someone right there. Yes, you can make Grisham a more of a... You know, he's an 8-hole guy in that lineup for sure.
Yeah, I got him in the 7 here.
You know, Mejia, you can drop down to like 7 at that point.
And I'm all right with Greg Garcia hitting 8 and playing second base a few times next year. A few times. But I mean, we ran into this problem last year when Ian Kinsler was signed, and I don't think any of us expected for him to get that rash of playing time that he got so earlier in the year, and it was just terrible. Just terrible. Just brutal, brutal, brutal. But there are moves that this is an exercise letting people know that there seems to be still a lot of work left to be done, because go through the what ifs, Ben. You know, the what ifs. Hunter Renfroe, is he going to be healthy? Is he going to hit better than 200? Mejia, is he going to continue to kind of rise? You know, he's on this upward plane. Is Franchi Cordero going to be healthy enough to contribute to this team ever? What's Grisham look like you said, in a Padre uniform? And then who's going to play second base? There's 5 or 6 unknowns right there.
It's interesting, though. We talked last hour to Matt Pauly, who was a Brewers pre- and post-game host, and he said Trent Grisham had a seeming major breakthrough this last offseason. He had never had power in the minor leagues. Made some tweaks. All of a sudden, he was driving the ball out of the yard.
Yeah.
Well, you know who that was last year, too? It was Luis Sarias.
Yes.
Didn't have any power. All of a sudden, started hitting the ball out of the ballpark at AAA. And the Padres seemed to think that was a mirage based on the baseball, based on things they didn't want to see him doing with his swing. Yet they're gambling now on a guy who basically kind of did the same thing for the Milwaukee Brewers in their minor league system, that had a big turnaround in this super offensive year for AAA players, AAA batters. What's the difference between Grisham and Urias, their minor league numbers from last year?
See, the only difference is they're different positions. That's honestly, I feel like our buddy Corey Stewart tweets, and can Ben go back to reading prizes? This is the saddest S I have ever heard. Now, listen, again, I caution you to not get too upset. We're going to work with what we have, on our plate right now. We're not going to go into the cupboard for, fantasy ideas. There are other names out there that would really float your boat and turn this lineup into a powerhouse, if you will. Like a guy like Whit Merrifield, right? He would be a really dynamic player for the San Diego Padres and play second base. I don't know if they can get the deal done there. But, you know, another frontline starter, all of those things. But I'm telling you, man, where what's really got my stomach kind of turning is what's going on in the outfield, because there is just so much unknown in the outfield. I mean, basically the entire outfield is an unknown, in my opinion.
It's funny because last spring, of course, it was too crowded. Too many good options in the outfield for the Padres.
That's what we thought. Yeah. I mean, we thought it, and nobody really kind of, I mean, Hunter Early was like, oh, finally, here we go. And then just a huge, huge crash.
It's weird. You almost wish that a couple of guys had flamed out even harder. Like, at least you could dismiss.
Like a Franchi. You're like, all right, you know what? He's not the guy.
But now Hunter's in that
purgatory.
Where it's like, where he could be great. He was a fringe all-star. I mean, yeah. The defense was so improved last year.
It gives me a little bit of confidence.
But he was so horrible offensively the last couple of months of the season.
And maybe, you know, everybody was. Maybe that just is part of the growing process of a major league team that's coming together. You know, they're going through this stuff, the ups and the downs, and they all just hit the skids, man, at the end of the year. And it was ugly, uninspiring baseball.
All right, keep that lineup. Let's see how it evolves, though, over the offseason.
I will keep this lineup.
I don't think A.J. Preller is done by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, we're hearing he's still going to be very active. The winter meetings aren't until next week. In recent offseasons, the bigger moves don't even come until February or into March. So we could still see a lot of changes from what that looks like just a couple of weeks here into the offseason. That's a baseline. That's as bad as it's probably going to be.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty bad
as it's going to be. It's certainly better than it's been in other years. There's certainly some intrigue, some things. Hey, you get Tatis, you got Machado, you got Hosmer. I mean,
we had him last year.
And Tatis was fantastic.
He was fan.
And Hosmer was pretty
better,
good for
yeah,
the first
better.
4 months. He had a slow finish. Machado didn't have a strong finish. We'll see.
Tomorrow I'll do my lineup against left-handed pitching. Long tease there. 24 hours from now, Ben. Remember it.
All right.
My lineup against left-handed, will that look remarkably different and remarkably more potent?
We'll see.
With fewer unknowns.
When we come back, I am a big fan of the evolution of man in the 21st century. That we, you know, you are as well.
I am.
You get more in touch with your feelings.
Yes.
It's okay to show emotion now. You don't have to be that robot who never shows any feelings at all. Is there, can you go too far, though? Especially on live television. Rex Ryan was really pushing the limits there. We'll get his.
This is, you guys, you can't oversell this. This is, if you miss this, it's unreal. It almost sounds like a skit.
We also had some college coaches losing their minds this weekend. We'll get to all of that coming up next. Ben Woods, San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Wrapping it all up on a Monday morning here with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Coach John Quintero coming up at noon after the Jim Rome program. Gwen and Chris this afternoon. Again, looking forward to next week. We were just talking about it during the break. We're going to be out at the winter meetings, which will be in downtown San Diego, and we'll be broadcasting live from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. We shift back an hour so we can give you more coverage from the winter meetings next week.
Old school.
Live from the lobby.
I'm glad our boss didn't say, hey, you guys could just do 5 to 10. Be there. Nobody's going to be down there at 5, right? I mean, at 6 is when everybody's going to be cruising down.
I think so.
Friday, we got to go back to 5 a.m.?
Friday, we're back to 5.
Ugh. 5 back in the studio?
Nightmare.
Maybe as a reward, 6 to 9 on Friday, just to wrap up the week.
Yeah. Does he see a lot? You think he's going to sling us that kind of reward?
No,
see
probably
how we
do
not. Next week, but
yeah, we'll see how we
not.
Do.
Probably
all right, we've got, we got Rex Ryan sobbing.
You guys. This is amazing. You hear this yet, Hammer?
Right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan with Kelly Vanek. So what he was about, I would say a little 20 some odd years ago when football coaches started crying. I mean, I'm sure they did cry before that.
It was Dick Vermeil, wasn't
Dick Vermeil yeah. was famous for crying. Marty Schottenheimer wasn't above shedding a few tears. I don't know, they might have been crocodile tears, but wasn't above, you know, using that as a way to motivate his troops by showing how emotional he was and how much he cared about them and their success.
Got no problem with it.
Certainly have seen it a lot. And as I said, I'm generally in favor of the modernization of man. That we don't have to live in the dark ages where everyone just has to be a manly man all the time and be a jock and never show any emotions and be a robot. I'm not saying that Rex Ryan went too far. I'm just saying that you don't see generally anyone on television go as far as Rex Ryan did yesterday morning. And I was watching this live, Woods. It was ESPN's, Sunday morning countdown show, getting ready for NFL games, and they went to a feature about Los Angeles Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn. By all accounts, good guy. You know, he didn't become the coach until after they moved, so I don't know him, haven't met him, haven't covered him. But in his offseason, this past summer, as part of a foundation he works with, he's got a Lynn Family Foundation and works with another foundation called Privilege to Serve. He made a trip to East Africa, the country of Tanzania, to help open a kindergarten through third grade school for 300 children of one of the native tribes.
Amazing.
Impoverished conditions, helps food, water, education available to children, you know, living just in horrible conditions in Africa. Great story. Fantastic. And love the support of it. And obviously Rex Ryan did as well, because when they came out of this story, and remember, Rex Ryan used to be coach in Buffalo where Anthony Lynn was the assistant. Became the interim coach there and then became the Chargers coach. So they have a relationship. Comes out of this story, and Rex Ryan does not try to control himself at all with his reaction.
Rex, I loved watching you watch that, because that's your friend, and I could see the pride in your eyes. What makes this guy so special, Rex?
That's who he is?
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, he's a difference maker. Mm. Sam, he will win a Super Bowl. I mean, I was with him for 8 years. I'm so proud of him.
Oh, my God.
You can see it makes us all emotional. You can see the impact that he's had on you. Look, there's a lot of good guys in the league, and they don't get talked about enough. Right.
My wife wouldn't speak that way of me if I was dead.
I'm so proud of
him. I don't want to laugh because it was genuine.
I'm not laughing.
He was very sincere.
I'm not laughing at the sentiment. I'm laughing at the way.
It's just so over the top.
I'm laughing at the way that it sounds in my head. Okay? That's the only thing I'm laughing
at. I'm so proud of him.
That's funny. The way he says it is funny. The way you tell the story, you know, it's funny. It's funny.
That's who he is.
Yeah.
Like,
it is.
He's a difference maker. Sam, he will win a Super Bowl.
You know that he did not want that. And if you've ever been so emotional, it's happened to me. It's happened to us on the air before. You don't want it to happen. And the harder you fight, that's when it sounds like this.
It is
and
true.
That's when you're really fighting it.
I'm so proud of him.
And instead of just taking a moment to compose yourself and try to get
it's when you try to fight it, hammer, then it comes out like that.
And it sounds, that's why you get lampooned a little. Now, Rex
that's
Ryan.
That's who he is.
Yeah.
Look, obviously, tough guy.
I love Rex Ryan.
He's great.
Ultimate right? football dude.
He's great. Just a football
kind of,
guy.
Kind of a buffoon sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
To be sure.
Yeah, but I mean, look, I'm not laughing at him for crying. I know I've wept.
Now, if I'm going to make any comment, I mean, you know, he's a difference maker. He's not making the difference at all this season. Chargers last year won a lot of close games, and Anthony Lynn was hailed. It's like, wow, okay, finally a Chargers coach who knows how to win a close game. What happened between last year and this year? They lose every close game. The Los Angeles Chargers, get this, Woods, if you look at the NFL standings, they're 4-8. They have actually outscored their opponents for the season 244-241. They have a +3 point differential, and they've lost 8 of their 12 games.
Yeah.
All 8 losses are by less than 7 points or less. They've also had some blowout wins to, you know, make that uneven balance. When you have a positive win or point differential, yeah, you should probably be around 500 or better. Like the Raiders are 6-6. Their point differential, negative 87. They've been outscored by 87
Good
points.
God.
They're two games ahead of the Chargers in the AFC West. That unfortunately is called coaching making as little as they can out of the talent they've got on the field.
I'm watching the game yesterday. They're down 14-3, I believe, and there's a 2 minutes left or whatever. And Anthony Lynn's not. They make a huge stop on first down against the Broncos. Huge, like 5 yard loss. Conventional wisdom says timeout. We're gonna make them punt. We want the ball back one more time. He didn't do that. Now they ended up scoring 82 yards in two plays. They got extremely. Lynn was happy to go into that locker room at the half down 14-3. The fact that they scored so quickly is kind of a gift.
I thought the worst was in the final drive when they were down three and they were facing fourth and one. And, I mean, you know what? There's a debate there. You've got all your timeouts left. Do you go for it? You're in your own territory. Or do you punt away and try to get a defensive stop and get the punt back? I think you say go for it, especially on fourth and one. But they took so much time trying to decide that they burned one of their timeouts, which at that point takes the decision out of your hands. Because you punt then you're not going to get the ball back with much time left, even if you do get it back. So then they have to go for it. Then they commit a false start, fourth and six. Then they commit another false start, fourth and 11. Now they're still going for it. And the best play they come up with was Phillip Rivers basically chucking it up into double coverage.
Yeah.
And Mike Williams made like an unbelievable. I think it was
proud of him.
The number two play of the week just to keep that drive going with a one-handed catch.
Yeah, man.
And that was what they came up with. It was terrible coaching at the end of the game, as usual. And instead, they ended up getting the field goal. They lose it on a pass interference penalty with 3 seconds to go to set up the winning kick for Denver.
I'm so proud of them.
And I wanted to ask you guys about this. Ben, your wife went to Washington State, okay? And Mike Leach has been a guy that is kind of, you know, listen, I mean, people know more about Washington State than they have in a while because of Mike Leach. Now, they don't win massive, massive games all the time, but
They still win a lot.
Yeah, but they can't win the Apple Cup.
They can't win the Apple Cup.
Shelly was so mad on Friday.
I'm so proud of them.
Yet another year that Washington State, this time they went to Seattle and just can't beat the Huskies.
Can't beat the Huskies. And so this...
Seven or eight in a row?
Yeah, something like that. And I saw this tweet about Mike Leach after the game. Listen to this audio. They said, the person that tweeted said, this is why big schools are afraid of Mike Leach.
Well, it's frustrating. I do find this part of it interesting, though. I mean, as fast as you guys rank their recruiting class, you know, in the top 10, and then you're always surprised when they win. So I think that, that would have a little something to do with it.
So you're not supposed to beat teams that have higher ranked recruiting classes?
Well, we certainly have before. We certainly have before. We didn't win this one, and I don't care to have a big discussion with you on it because I really don't care what you think.
Oh, God.
You know, and you run your mouth and your little column and stuff like some sanctimonious troll and where, you know, you've never been fair or even-handed with us, so I really don't care what you think. Okay, go ahead, because you're going to write some nasty stuff anyway, like you always do. And I don't know which coug way back when did something that offended you.
Shelley.
And I really don't care about that either. But you can live your little meager life in your little hole and write nasty things. And if that makes you feel even, you go right ahead. Okay, next.
Good God. Sensitive. Very sensitive. It's after a loss. I understand. It's after another, you know, brutal defeat at the hands of the Huskies. Another Apple Cup you didn't win. He was over the line, wasn't he?
Well, we like candid coaches.
We do.
I mean, no one wants to be constantly attacked by a writer who's got, you know, just seems to write the same thing over and over, attacking you. I'm sure it's frustrating.
God, I got this Twitter follower. He does it to me every day.
But, the right,
and it makes me insane.
I know, but the right way to the right way to handle it is respond with kindness. And then the more they attack, the kinder you are. There's just nowhere to go.
You're so right.
There's nowhere to go after that. When you respond like that, well, of course, then it's a story again. And it just feeds that cycle again. And, all right, he's getting under his skin. It's another column. Then where do you go? You respond with kindness. There's nothing they can do.
You're so right.
But my whole thing with the kindness aspect is, for me personally, I know that if I have like an issue in my head, and if I try to kill somebody with kindness, when I'm by myself, I'm thinking about how this person is driving me mad.
Yes.
And everything I wish I could say to him,
yes.
You want to give him that Homer Simpson strangle with Bart and just like do whatever it takes. But you're being nice and it's driving you literally mad. When I go off on people and tell them how I really
feel better.
I feel so much better. And I understand that I'm punching down sometimes.
Yeah.
But man, it feels so
good. You know, you run your mouth and your little column and stuff like some sanctimonious troll.
I mean, it is like...
To call someone that's awesome.
It's so... I mean, yeah, but you wonder...
Embarrass him in front of his peers.
You want, and that's Mike Leach, so nobody knows what the hell he's thinking half the time. You don't know if he got in his car shut. When I do things like that, I always kick myself later. Always. 100% of the time. I'll say something on a podcast. I'll say something on the air, whatever. Or I'll tweet something. And then I'll get in my car and I'll go, God, why did I do that? Now I look like I'm affected.
Would it have been better to just kind of brush it off, not really give him an answer, and then later maybe pull him aside? I mean, he just aired him out.
He aired him out. Did you hear somebody in the background, too? Somebody in the background goes, play it again from the start. Listen.
Well, it's frustrating. I do find this part of it interesting, though. I mean, as fast as you guys rank their recruiting class, you know, in the top 10, and then you're always surprised when they win. So I think that, you know, maybe that would have a little something to do with it.
So you're not supposed to beat teams that have higher-ranked recruiting classes?
Well, we certainly have before. We didn't win this one, and I don't care to have a big discussion with you on it because I really don't care what you think. You know, and you run your mouth in your little column and stuff like... some sanctimonious troll, and where you know you've never been very good with us, so I really don't care.
Who knows who that was?
You know, it's a bad argument too. Leach is saying, "Well, they get better recruits. Well, recruit better then.
That's
part of your job. You can't say, oh, well, they got better recruits than us, and you expect us to win. Well, go. It's not like you didn't pick your own team. You were recruiting the players that came to Washington State. It's a bad argument." By Mike Leach.
And then finally, last on the coach's corner here of Fun Audio, Nick Saban. And this is what people don't like about Alabama when things like this happen. Look, man, you got out-coached at the end of the game. You did. You got out-coached straight up, and instead of tipping your hat, you said this.
You know, I really feel that it was pretty unfair play at the end of the game. They substituted a punter as a wide receiver. So we put the punt team in, and then... When the quarterback was still in there, we tried to put the defense back in. I thought they should have given us a little more time to substitute and get Waddle out as a returner. We get called for 12 guys on the field.
I mean, it was the worst way to lose a game ever, and it was like their fifth.
It is tough because it was fourth down. And fourth and four.
Punting. There was going to be about a minute left that Alabama could have gone down and covered, and they did not, and they did not get the chance.
I didn't love how that game ended. I wanted to see Alabama get another chance to see what would have happened.
Me too.
If they had gone down. It was a terrible way to end. It's still not a good look for Nick Saban. When you're that successful as a coach, try to lose gracefully once in a while. Nick Saban, by the way, this is the stat of the weekend. Saw this morning, I think, from Andrew Siciliano. First weekend that Alabama and the New England Patriots have both lost.
Let's go!
Since 2011.
Woo!
8 years Jesus. Since they both lost on the same weekend. That's how long it's been. For Belichick and Saban losing on the same weekend.
That is nuts.
Eight
Congrats
years.
To Hammers Texans. You guys
crushed it.
Yeah, you did. It was so dorky, though. The
Love
pregame.
It. The SWAT outfit.
The walk-in SWAT outfit.
How was that dorky?
Okay, so if people missed it, it was dorky. This is like a Bill O'Brien. Is like a shtick where they...
Is it his or is it coach's staff
or
the
players?
I don't know who
it's
it is.
It's the linebackers. They call themselves the Rock Boys.
What have they done? They've done some other outfits before.
Yeah, they did. They did the Mortal Kombat, they dressed as Mortal Kombat characters, which
now,
is also
they've won
badass.
Every game they've done that?
No.
They've won, and
not
that's
every,
all that matters.
Not every time they've done it, no.
At least they didn't wear the Letterman's jacket.
Because that looks really stupid when you lose.
But
it looks
won.
Cool when you win.
But they
well,
won.
Well, it's like I said, you can if you do that, you better win. I mean, they came in full SWAT gear
I thought
night.
The coolest part of the game was the end-around reverse option
so
touchdown that pretty much sealed the win in the second half. Where DeAndre Hopkins came around an end-around option, and then pitched it to Deshaun Watson. It turned out to be a forward pitch, so it went down as a forward touchdown pass.
Yeah.
You have the call of that play?
First and goal at the six.
Oh, my God.
Out of the gun, they give to Johnson, who gives it back to DeAndre Hopkins, who pitches it to Deshaun Watson, running down the sidelines and running in for the touchdown. Oh, my goodness, DeAndre Hopkins with the option pitch to Deshaun Watson and a touchdown for the Texans. Some razzle-dazzle gives him a 27-9 lead.
So the instinct is to, oh, what, offensive coordinator is a genius, what a great play. As it turns out, found out after the game, you know who designed that play? Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins.
It's pretty awesome, man.
I'm so proud of him.
I really am.
They drew it up, what, just on a couple pieces of paper and said, Coach,
we want to run this. I love that.
And they put it in the game plan.
It's like us in the backyard when we were kids. It's amazing.
The best football players making some of the best football plays we've ever seen.
Hey, listen, credit where credit is due. It's a big win. If you're a Patriots fan, you're a little nervous about how your offense has been performing. Tom Brady's got Julian Edelman, and it seems like that's about all he's got.
I would just like to pat ourselves on the backs because we are the only sports show in America today that has not and will not do, coming up next, is Tom Brady's run finally coming
to
an end.
Yeah, we didn't do it. He didn't do it. We'll probably do it tomorrow.
Only because I've already called it. They're scoring 51 in the divisional round of playoffs.
They will. Don't bury them
the
until
story,
they're dead.
For 2 weeks, people are going to have a bye.
You know, they got a bye next?
Well, no, going into the playoffs, because they get the first or second seed, although Baltimore now has the tiebreaker on them.
But
they'll have
coming.
A bye for 2 weeks, everyone will say, what kind of offense is going to show up? Are they going to be able to score enough points to win in the playoffs? And they're going to score like 51 against the Chiefs or something.
Some no-name wide receiver, fourth on the depth chart, will go off for 220 and two touchdowns.
And Antonio Brown coming back.
Edelman will go ham on somebody. Like
you know it's coming.
You know it's coming.
It's just the same every year. It's the same story every year.
They do look stagnant, and Tom Brady does look a little bit over.
For now.
He looks a little bit old.
Kind of 42-ish.
Looks 42 years old.
Good 42.
Yeah.
But kind of 42.
Good looking 42.
I wish I looked that 42.
100%.
That is it for a Monday. Jim Rome Show is coming up next this afternoon.
Peace out, John Katera, Gwen, and Chris.
We've got Coach Brian Dutcher, the Aztecs, joining us tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. We will talk to you at 5 tomorrow for Hammer, for Paul, for Woodsy. I'm Ben. Thanks for joining us right here on 97.3 The Fan. We are Ben and Woods.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.